Because I do think that that's the big fear for parents. It's like, what if my child can't bounce back? What if it's all too much? But I think when you know you're building the capacity, you're growing the window of tolerance, but you're recognizing that everybody's window of tolerance is different and you need to meet kids where they are. It's so heartening. It's just like, okay, we could do this. It's harder, but it is giving the capacity. It's giving hope for that stretched capacity. And we want that. We just want to be able to stretch our kids, but we don't want to break them.
I'm Debbie Reber, and welcome to Tilled Parenting, a podcast featuring interviews and conversations aimed at inspiring, informing, and supporting parents raising differently wired kids. I can't tell you how many parenting books I've read, but I can tell you that sometimes when I finish reading a parenting book, I feel the sense of loss or stress or as if I'm somehow behind and need to backtrack to get things going in the right direction. So when I come across a book that feels supportive and accessible, I'm always happy to share it with you. That is definitely the case with The 5 Principles of Parenting, Your Essential Guide to Raising Good Humans, the new book by friend of the pod, Dr. Aliza Pressman. I think what I love so much about Aliza's work is that she compassionately reminds us that there is no one right way to raise good humans. Instead, in her book, she helps parents chart a manageable course for raising good humans that's in alignment with our own values and our children's unique temperaments. The 5 principles outlined in her book that she walks us through in this conversation, relationship, reflection, regulation, rules, and repair, can be used to get things right often enough, because there is no getting a perfect score in parenting. So many great reminders in this conversation, and the one that I appreciated the most is that even though what it takes to raise good humans may sound simple, that doesn't mean it's easy or that it's not going to feel messy. In fact, it's most definitely going to feel messy, and that's okay. Before I get to our conversation, here's a little bit more about Aliza. Dr. Aliza Pressman is a developmental psychologist with nearly 2 decades of experience working with families and the healthcare providers who care for them. She is the co-founding director of the Mount Sinai Parenting Center and the host of the award-winning podcast Raising Good Humans. In addition to her PhD in developmental psychology from Columbia, Aliza also holds a teaching certificate in mindfulness and meditation from the Greater Good Science Center at the University of California at Berkeley, and is the mother of 2 teenagers. This is a gentle, supportive conversation, so I encourage you to just take a few slow, deep breaths and settle in. Hey, Aliza, welcome back to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me back.
Yeah, we were just talking before I hit record, and we recorded in very different times in the world. We were kind of like really in it in the COVID pandemic, and we talked about trauma and burnout, and it was such a good conversation. Listeners, if you want a little flashback, there's a lot of gold in that conversation. I'll include the link in the show notes page, but we're going to have a much different conversation today and celebrate and learn more about your new book. But before we get into that, for listeners who aren't familiar with you and your work, would you just give us your introduction and who you are in the world and your sweet spot in what you do?
Sure. I am a developmental psychologist, which is just a different kind of lens for psychologists. It's looking at change over time and how we come to be who we are versus a sort of diagnosis lens or a clinical lens. And I am the co-founding director of the Mount Sinai Parenting Center, which is actually housed at a hospital in New York City, but we work across almost 200 hospitals in the United States, working with healthcare providers and integrating parenting support into the healthcare visits and some parent-facing work. And I have a podcast called Raising Good Humans, and I work with parents. I kind of try to do a little bit of a bunch of different ways to get through to families, however I can best support them. And I guess I wrote this book to have another way to reach families, mostly parents, primarily mothers, if I'm honest. And my lens is developmental psychology, but then I also get the benefit of working with healthcare providers and directly with families. And I think it just helps me imagine different scenarios and imagine different experiences and environments.
as you were talking, you mentioned your podcast, Raising Good Humans. And I would love to just hear, how do you define a good human? Because I think that's something we just kind of throw around. Of course, we want to raise good humans, but what does that mean to you?
This is one of those things that I think is an annoying answer, but I genuinely believe that we all know what a good human is for us. And it's our job as parents and caregivers to decide what that means in our family. And I would never presume to say what a good human is. I think it's funny because if you say raising good humans, or we all, of course, want to raise good humans, but if you ask what it is, I think we just kind of know. But I don't know that how we would each individually define it is the same. And I go through the book, there's a whole exercise on figuring that out, because I just don't want to have that arrogance of like, I know what a good human is and what the outcomes are that you're looking for your family. It's just not my business. I mean, there are certain things that are like no brainer, not good human, but beyond the like fundamental good and evil stuff, I really think there's such a huge range of how we define good human. So I would turn it right back to everyone to just decide. And I think that is in and of itself a really helpful exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great answer. So you have a new book out, which you just shared with me, made the New York Times bestseller list. So congratulations as an author. Like, I know what a huge deal that is. And it's something to be celebrated. So yay.
Thank you. No one else cares but other authors, but it is really fun.
It is. It's worthy of celebrating for sure. Your book is called The Five Principles of Parenting, Your Essential Guide to Raising Good Humans. You mentioned that this was another way to get your message out into the world, but what was your biggest hope for this book and what you wanted it to do for families?
I was hoping this book could clear away noise that I think we are so inundated. It's a funny balance because I'm part of inundating parents. I just said all the things that I'm doing that are parent facing, and the podcast every week is not inundating parents. But I wanted to clear away the noise that just gets us kind of stuck in the minutia that probably doesn't matter for raising good humans, no matter what the good human is, and really offer what we know from the science matters, combined with everybody's values and cultural backgrounds and histories and all the stuff that I can't know what you come in with, but I can help you think about. And I wanted to offer that for the full range of ages from zero to adolescence, so that everything kind of could be housed under one roof. I just wanted a resource for parents that gave enough information, but not so much that it felt like, now I'm going to fixate on something that doesn't even matter. And I also just really wanted to provide relief, because I think in the inundation and optimization culture of parenting, we are making ourselves crazy. And sadly, not to the benefit of our kids, which is the whole point. So I think it doesn't serve us and it doesn't serve our kids. But I also think there's chaos in not having resources and not knowing what we know from the science and not having the support of community. So I really try to be balanced about that. And I wanted the book to offer that balance.
Yeah. One of the things that I think your book does is that what you just said, it helps parents rely less on parenting advice. I'm sure as you do, I read all the books. I have two stacks over here that I have to get through. And a lot of times they can be spotlights on what we're getting wrong. And then it's like, oh gosh, how do I back up this truck and get back on top of things? And even kind of from a tone perspective, I felt your book was really gentle is the word that's coming to mind, but it just felt very supportive. Like we're just having a conversation over coffee kind of thing, just talking about these things. And you cover so much ground in the book, but it didn't make me feel anxious about things. It made me expand my sense of how I want to be as a parent.
Thank you. That makes me so happy. And there are incredible books out there that are targeting specific topics and issues and challenges that are incredible. What I want to avoid, though, is the scary headlines that are better for marketing, frankly. The urgency is there. And if you don't do this, harm will come to your kids, or harm is coming to your kids. So stop what you're doing. Or there's a lot of pathologizing almost of parenting that I just wanted to avoid. And also, I still think there's like a lot of concrete stuff that can be helpful, But yeah, I wanted to have like a tender, gentle tone because for the majority of cases in the world or circumstances, that is all that is required.
Yeah. And just for listeners, I always like to kind of set expectations. So your book is a general parenting book in that it's not specifically written for parents raising neurodivergent kids. I just always want to put that out there. And I always read things through that lens of a parent of a neurodivergent kid and kind of see how would this apply to me and how accessible does it feel to me as that parent? I did feel it was accessible. I'm wondering how you, in writing the book and putting it together, how you considered the needs of parents with very different experiences.
So part of the way I chose the five principles was very specifically thinking, well, would this matter to every child? Because neurodivergence is, we're seeing this as a wider net than anybody ever realized. I didn't want to target parents who were thinking of neurotypical versus neurodivergent. I really wanted to target all parents. And of course, if you are dealing with something that requires incredibly specific care, these principles still apply. But I think the second half of the book that gives what I call page to stage, like how does the science apply in these exact circumstances? I think some of it, I took neurodivergence into account for all of it, but recognizing that there are certain areas, like in discipline, for example, where it's just, you just need to be aware of your own child's temperament and brain in order to translate it. But I actually really tried hard to assume that anybody reading this may be reading this from the lens of having a neurodivergent kid or of a neurodivergent brain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. It is more and more of us now. I'm starting to think there is no such thing as neurotypical at this point. The title of your book is The Five Principles of Parenting, and you just kind of tease that these five principles. So I would love to take a quick break. And when we get back, if you wouldn't mind walking us through those.
I'm on the road this month, and oh man, am I missing my sweet kitties, Haskell and Lua. They've been a part of our family for more than 2 years, and I'm so grateful they're keeping Darren such good company while I'm away. If you're getting a new pet soon, you're probably already thinking about everything you'll need to buy. Food, toys, a cozy bed, doggy bags or litter boxes. Something you may not be thinking about, though, is pet insurance. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/parenting. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/parenting. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/parenting. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. If you listen to this show, you probably know that at least 1 in 5 children is differently wired. But did you know that approximately 1 in 2 women will experience hair thinning? If you're part of that 50%, you are absolutely not alone. But because hair thinning for women isn't something people openly talk about, going through it can feel lonely and frustrating. So why not do something about it with Nutrafol? Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding. Everyone's root causes of hair thinning are different, so a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth isn't going to cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas tailored to give your hair what it needs to grow throughout different stages, postpartum, menopause, even for different lifestyles like a plant-based diet. To get your personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes, you can take a simple hair wellness quiz on Nutrafol.com. And because there's no prescription required, you can quickly get set up online with free shipping and automated deliveries, which make it so much easier to stick with your new hair care routine. See results in 3 to 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code TILT. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code TILT. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code TILT. And we are back. I know what the five principles are. I have them written down right here. And you mentioned the word relief, which also starts with R. All your five principles start with the letter R. I know we can't go into great detail, but would you mind sharing with us what those five principles are and giving us a little bit of insight?
Sure. And that's so funny. Relief, I forgot, was an R word. I really like wanted to choose R words because like in our busy minds, as I'm saying, clear away the noise, I just want to make it easier to remember. But before I go over them, I want to say that none of these are my ideas. Like how I put it together, I hope speaks to people, but I took the science, robust science from decades of research that I did not do. So I say that first because I think it's easier to take in. And obviously, those resources are in the book, but also because I get really frustrated when like this is not about an approach that I came up with and that is like the Dr. Eliza thing. This is just me translating developmental science for parents and then how it applies practically. But I did make the words our words because I thought it'd be easier to remember. So relationship, reflection, regulation, rules, and repair. Now, some of those are in fact, the language that's used in the developmental literature about how humans thrive. But some of them, I squeeze them into our words that I think work really well. But they are used in other ways. So relationship, you might hear attachment relationship or attachment or secure attachment or attunement or connection. That's all under the umbrella of relationship. And reflection is actually used in the science. There's a lot of science about reflection, but you could also think of reflection as mindfulness or pausing or looking at how you come to be who you are so that you can make more intentional decisions about how you're raising your kids. Regulation is co-regulation and self-regulation, which are kind of inextricably linked because we just don't live in a world without other people, thankfully. And rules was tricky because people have really big reactions to the word rules. Some of us feel quite rebellious when we hear rules, but rules encompasses boundaries and limits and are really important for safety. And we just can't rely on a close relationship in the absence of the safety of rules because the relationship wouldn't be thriving. And then finally, repair, which is very much in the literature and really heartening and has been around for decades. And science that's been around for decades that's more recently been replicated with neuroscience is always appealing because it just feels like soothing. Like, oh, this is a real thing across cultures, across communities, across brain types and temperament. And it still is pretty weighty. And so that really mattered to me because I chose principles that are in our control. Like we can actually do something about it. You can't change or control anybody else, but you can yourself. So all the principles apply to us and what we can do as we're raising our kids or teaching kids or caregiving in any way. And that all those principles are the pathway to resilience that is in our control. So there's a lot to do with resilience and functioning that has nothing to do with us. I don't fixate on that because what are you going to do about it? I mean, you could make systemic changes and fight the good fight. But in general, I wanted to focus on what we can actually control. And then also I chose skills to build in our kids that are actually teachable. So it would be more challenging, for example, to build regulation skills in a neurodivergent child, but that doesn't mean that it's not buildable. In fact, I would argue, and I'm sure you would too, that it is more important to really build those skills. And so I tried to lean into what we can do, what we can teach, and what we can control in ourselves and step away from telling parents all of the things that are terrible that you can't do anything about.
Yeah, that's great. And it's interesting, you said you would argue that it's more important to build those skills in our neurodivergent kids. And I would add to that, that oftentimes the ways in which we are supporting our kids in learning these skills, coping strategies, regulation skills, interoception, all of those things, oftentimes these are skills that neurotypical kids aren't learning because they're not struggling in those areas. So in some ways, I think neurodivergent kids can have a leg up with some of the skill building.
That's so true. It's a good point.
I'd love to just touch upon resilience a little bit more, and then maybe you could show us how these five principles, this pathway, might be leaned on in a specific circumstance or situation. But this idea of resilience is something that I think it's tricky. I love that you're putting it on what can the parents control. I think that word resilience, especially again for the listenership of my show, can be a tough one because we may not see these external presentations of what we might identify as resilience. We might see a child who struggles more in certain environments, and then we feel, oh gosh, we really have to help our kid get the skills so they can build that resilience, but it feels like it's a harder lift for our kids. So could you talk a little bit more about how you define resilience and the things that we can do or what it might look like for our kids?
So for me, I agree. It can be so disheartening to think, well, my child is an orchid child. Like they're not robust. They're built to wither. And if they don't get exactly what they need, it's a disaster. But I think that the heartening thing is that even kids who struggle to bounce back, so it feels like, oh my God, how are they going to build resilience in this world that's going to keep coming at them? That integrating those principles into your parenting really move the needle. And it just is a long game. When I say orchid, I mean just in the sense that an orchid takes a more specific recipe of sunlight, water, and soil to thrive, whereas a dandelion is going to grow wherever, however, you just need to throw a little sunlight, water, and soil at them. And I think you could consider neurodivergent kids more orchids because they're going to thrive and bloom, but in their own way and through a lot more specific support. But then they do grow up and go out into the world. And for the flower that they are robust. They just might not be a dandelion. They just might not be able to kind of just go with it no matter what. And that's okay because resilience isn't about that. It really is about having capacity to know that you can get up again. And one of the things that we can control is building those skills in our kids and supporting them in the way that they need to be supported through those principles that we have in our control. We know from decades of research, going all the way back to World War I, that it matters. It matters to buffer the effects of the incoming stuff in this world that's just feeling so hard to bear. Because I do think that that's the big fear for parents is like, what if my child can't bounce back? What if it's all too much? But I think when you know you're building the capacity, you're growing the window of tolerance, but you're recognizing that everybody's window of tolerance is different and you need to meet kids where they are, it's so heartening. It's just like, okay, we could do this. It's harder, but it is giving the capacity. It's giving hope for that stretched capacity. And we want that. We just want to be able to stretch our kids, but we don't want to break them. And so knowing your child, particularly if you have a neurodivergent child, knowing their capacity and then building that muscle and stretching those muscles is so powerful.
I really appreciated that definition and description of resilience. It just really resonated for me and again, felt gentle and not worrisome. right? That idea of stretching. Yeah, we can do that. That feels doable. And I did appreciate that you talk about the orchid child and the dandelion child. I think that that is a nice framework. I've heard that before.
It comes from Thomas Boyce. Oh,
okay. It makes so much sense. And it's a nice positive visual to keep in mind. Let's take a quick break. And then I want to talk about this plug and play framework that you have, like how we can take these five principles and apply them to a specific situation to give listeners an idea.
This year, I've been working on becoming more attuned to my body. And so I'm starting to really recognize how periodic spikes in anxiety or disruptions to my routines can seriously throw my whole system off. And as I've been traveling a ton this past month, which is both disruptive and somewhat stressful, I'm especially glad that I have the extra support of Symbiotic Plus, a 3-in-1 supplement from Ritual with clinically studied prebiotics, probiotics, and a postbiotic to support a balanced gut microbiome. Symbiotic Plus provides fuel to the cells that make up the gut lining to support a healthy gut barrier. And it comes in this very cool minty delayed release capsule, which was specifically designed to help survive the harsh conditions of the upper GI tract for delivery to the colon. The bonus is that the capsules don't need to be refrigerated, so I can easily bring them with me in my carry-on. On a personal level, I love that Ritual is committed to sustainability. They're a female-founded B Corp, meaning they are holding themselves accountable long-term to not only think about their company's financial health, but also the health of people and our planet. There's no more shame in your gut game. Symbiotic Plus and Ritual are here to celebrate, not hide your insides. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/tilt. Start Ritual or add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/tilt for 25% off.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Okay, so in the second half of your book, you walk us through how these five principles of parenting you just mentioned, relationship, reflection, regulation, rules, and repair, how they can really be applied to any common parenting situation that a parent might encounter. That was great. It's not about memorizing scripts and kind of like having it all sorted, but if you can remember these five R's, it can really help you. I would love if you could give us an example of that. And I was going to ask you specifically about siblings, because that's a question I get asked all the time. And you actually have a great example in here too of neurodivergent sibling versus a neurotypical sibling and navigating that dynamic. I thought was great. But how might we, in the midst of a conflict, for example, use and apply these five R's to navigating that situation?
The first thing to check is like, if you are in the middle of a conflict and it's heightened, nobody's regulated, this is not when you're teaching anybody anything. So that's just a reminder that I have throughout the book, because you have to know. And that's why there are different principles, and regulation is one of them. And if you aren't regulated, yourself included, it's not the time. Then get yourself regulated. That's the primary goal, is like, is everybody safe? Those are rules. Rules make sure everybody's safe. So if one sibling is clocking another on the head, they broke that rule. And the rule is like to not harm other people's bodies. We need to separate those bodies and protect. But then it's a matter of, you could pick any principle in that moment. I personally think breathing is the first thing to do if nobody's in danger. So like, assuming nobody's in danger, reflect. Because the only thing you need for reflection is to be able to take a breath. And that allows you to ask yourself, what does everybody need right now? Like, what story am I telling myself right now? What am I putting on one kid versus the other kid? Are you overprotective of one? Do you kind of expect more of the other? Maybe you have one kid who is neurodivergent and one kid who is not. And without reflection, you might not notice that you're constantly choosing one over the other because you have to, because it feels so urgent. But if you can take a moment and say like, okay, I'm setting up a dynamic here that isn't serving anybody. What's this about? And again, that's reflection, which is in the context of safety. You can do it. If nobody's safe, you can't do any of this. Bodies need to be safe. And then after that, you have the breath to regulate. And when you regulate yourself, you're basically saying, there is no false alarm. I can tell my very reactive brain right now, because we get reactive when siblings are in conflict. My kids are not being chased by a bear. They're not being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. Life is going to be okay. Right this second, we're all uncomfortable. And in doing that, you can say to yourself, is this a false alarm? Yes, it is. And when you know the difference between a false alarm and a real alarm, or an imagined versus real, you can actually make sure that your whole nervous system is, without saying a word to your kids, you don't have to say to them, hey, no one's being chased by a bear. This is not urgent. Because for them, it's urgent because they don't have the capacity to regulate. But what they can do is borrow your nervous system. So if you can go through this whole thing in your head, your nervous system is going to take care of their nervous system. And over time, not in that moment, but over time, it's giving them the tools to grow their regulation. If everybody's dysregulated and you get dysregulated because you haven't been able to say, hey, nervous system, this is not an emergency. Please don't have a stress response. Because essentially that's all this is we go into a stress response, which puts us into fight, flight, or freeze. And then we don't have the capacity to reflect and to take a moment and to regulate because we're going to emergency systems. But when we can set that alarm off, which typically truly is just taking a few breaths, maybe put your hands under cold water. You can hum. There are things that you do. You might look strange, but there are things that you can do to tell your nervous system that everybody is safe. That's your entire job. Because once everybody is safe in your mind, again, nobody needs to say anything. Your kids being dysregulated is not going to shake you. It can't shake you. You might get annoyed, which is reasonable, but you won't go into that mama bear protective pouncing that can happen. And then all of a sudden you have pounced on one of your kids or both of them, because really what you're saying is, I'm terrified. You don't need to be terrified. They're just fighting over something dumb. It just feels like it. So then I would lean into relationship and rules. Relationship is like, make sure that both kids feel very clear that you love them and you get it. You're validating their feelings. You're able to make sure they feel safe because you feel safe. And then the rules are just clear. Like, here's what's allowed in this house. This is for your safety, either emotional safety or physical safety. And for my boundaries, because there's only so much screaming at me that I can take. There's only so much space that I can combine with you. We are not the same person. I have to set appropriate boundaries and behavioral limits. If it all goes poorly and you regret how you handled it, at a later moment when you're ready, you make repairs and play that on repeat. And that is parenting your whole life. This is just so, like, there are obviously very specific things in the book. And, you know, repair specifically might be first with yourself. I blew it. I screamed. I chose the kid that I always say that I'm not going to do that to. And I did it again. Or I put so much pressure on my child who is just always, you know, the expectation is that they're going to be able to rise above. I am going to blow it again, but I'm going to do my best. And on balance, more often than not, I keep it together. So I'm going to forgive myself. And now I can go forth and make repairs with my kids. And that can come in the form of, you know, a real apology with a plan, with an understanding of what might have gone wrong and an understanding of like why it might have felt scary. But it can also come in the form of just like laughing, finding your way back to connection. It doesn't have to be like a scripted apology. And all of that it's almost so simple that it seems ridiculous, which is why I gave 1,000 real life scenarios in the book. But in the end, with all the billions of courses you can take online, even all the interviews that I do, in the end, it goes back to that. Whether you're talking about siblings, social media, potty training, like it always comes back to the same answer. It's just said in a more specific way based on the scenario. So that's the reason why I give scenarios, is to make it so that this becomes sort of fluent. And I think it is fluent in a lot of us, but we don't believe it. Like, we feel like there has to be a better answer. Like, there has to be a way. This is the way, and it's just ugly. It's frankly just messy and ugly looking. And so it can feel like there's an answer somewhere out there that is beyond this. There isn't. There just isn't. Even in the examples of discipline that I give, where I'm like, choose your own adventure. If you believe in rewards, here's the downside of rewards. Here's the upside of rewards. Here's how you give them if you choose them. It's still ultimately part of rules and connection. It's not a separate thing, a separate strategy. It's all part of the same plug and play system that we just have to believe in. I think the problem is my industry, at least, I'll say, of the developmental psychology and maybe clinical, and just like our whole parenting, this very new last 10, 15 years of the parenting culture feeling so commodified. I think that if you peel back the onion, everybody's saying the same thing. And it's just a matter of really believing it and recognizing that there is no magic to it. And anybody who says there is like a religion to this is selling you something. I mean, I know I'm selling a book, so it's a little bit hypocritical, but I think the book is there to translate it into the very specifics. I don't think people need the book if they feel like, oh, well, that makes sense. Then don't get the book. I know that's not what my publishers want me to say.
Your publicist is going to be very,
I know they hate it. I'm like, you don't have to get it. It's just like, does a book help you navigate? Or do you want something on your bedside table that's like, oh, I'm having this challenge. Oh, how does this apply to this age? Oh, what is this? But ultimately, it's the same thing translated into a bunch of different circumstances that you might be able to let just seep in through other ways, like listening to a podcast or just having a moment with yourself. I like to provide different ways to get to the same thing, which is supporting families. So for some people, a book, either listening to it or reading it, is helpful. But ultimately, that is the answer, which sounds so simplified because it is.
I love that, though. I mean, that feels so refreshing, just this acknowledgement that, yeah, it's messy and there's no getting around it. It is messy, full stop. I think that is something definitely the last 5 years has been the message I've learned over and over and over again, especially as someone who consumes all of this content and has all the tools. And I'm like, but it's still really hard.
Exactly. It's funny. I was thinking just this morning, or was it last night? I can't even remember, but I had this moment with my daughter, my teenager, where I said something along the lines of, with a stern tone of voice, like, you need to stop losing your temper. And then I started laughing and she started laughing because it's a ridiculous thing to say as I'm losing my temper. And I was like, oh my God. And my joke with my kids all the time is they're like, is that your professional parenting hat that you're wearing? Because which they know drives me crazy because I'm like, oh my God, I'm not expected to have all the answers, do everything quote unquote right or any of that. Like, this is messy. And also some things are easier for me because I can access them faster. I have a lot of more information. But a lot of what's easier for me about parenting is the deep confidence that I'm enough. And I don't think most parents have the benefit of that. So I want everybody to have that benefit.
So good. So good. As you shared that story about losing your temper and with your child, I remember, and I wrote about this in my book, insisting that my child use those coping strategies.
Always.
Right? You need to use coping strategy right now. And we also had a good laugh about it after we both calmed down, which took us quite a while. And I was like, actually, I'm the one who needs the coping strategies right now. There's so much more we could get into, but I feel like this is a great place to end this conversation. It was such a nice overview of the principles you share in your book, but I do want listeners to know there's so much great content in there that feels supportive for us as a parent. Like, you talk about reparenting ourselves. I think that is such a huge thing. You talk about being done with the murder archetype. You talk about really how we can tend to ourselves. You have a whole chapter on delight, which I loved because we don't think about delight and joy often when discussing parenting, but that was so nice to read. So I just want to encourage listeners. I know that Elisa said, don't worry about getting the book, but I would encourage you, if this conversation feels supportive to you, to definitely check out the 5 principles of parenting. Elisa, I so enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for all the work that you do and for breaking it down for us and for making us feel, like we've got this. Messy is just perfect in this case.
Thank you. I'm so glad you said that. And I so, so appreciate it. And thank you for having me. And yes, I do deeply believe that the book is very helpful. I just don't want to add to the to-do list for people. So I want it there as help and support and relief, but I don't want it to be like, oh my God, a new thing that I,
Yeah. Well, thank you. Before we say goodbye, where should listeners check you out and learn more about your work?
You can find me on Instagram. My Instagram is at Raising Good Humans Podcast. You can get the book, The 5 Principles of Parenting. And I have a website, which is just breaks down by episode, what ages it might be related to. I'm on Substack, drelisapressman.substack.com. I just have a free newsletter. I think that's it.
Awesome. That's great. Lots of resources, whatever kind of social media environment you like, there's something there for you. So listeners, I'll have links to all of that in the show notes. And thank you again, Elisa. It was so nice to chat with you today.
Thank you so much, Debbie. Stay warm.
You've been listening to the Tilt Parenting Podcast. To learn more about today's guest and the resources we talked about, check out the extensive show notes page on Tilt Parenting. There you'll find key takeaways, links to all the resources mentioned, and even a full transcript of our conversation. Just go to tiltparenting.com/podcast and select this episode. If you're looking for personal support from me and connection with the phenomenal community of parents raising neurodivergent kids, join us in the recently rebooted Differently Wired Club. The new Differently Wired Club can help you cultivate the positive shifts you're hoping for. Go to tiltparenting.com/club to learn more. The Tilt Parenting Podcast is hosted by me, Debbie Reber, author of Differently Wired and the founder of Tilt Parenting, and was edited by Andrea Curtis Amasquita. To support this show, please join my Patreon campaign, where you can set up a small monthly contribution. Just go to patreon.com/tiltparenting to learn more. If you want to follow Tilt on social media, you can find us at Tilt Parenting on Instagram and Facebook. And lastly, please take a minute to leave a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps this show stay visible so others can find it more easily. And that's all for this week. Stay safe, stay well, and take good care. And for more information about any of the parenting resources Tilt offers, visit tiltparenting.com.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of 2, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.